2nd April. Dear Daddy Long Legs. I am a beast. Please forget about that dreadful letter I sent you last week. I was feeling terribly lonely and miserable, and sore throaty the night I wrote. I didn't know it, but I was just sickening for tonsillitis and grip, and lots of things mixed. I'm in the infirmary now, and have been here for 6 days. This is the first time they would let me sit up, and have a pen and paper. The head nurse is very bossy. But I've been thinking about it all the time, and I shan't get well until you forgive me. Here is a picture of the way I look, with a bandage tied around my head in rabbit's ears. Doesn't that arouse your sympathy? I am having sublingual gland swelling. And I've been studying physiology all the year, without ever hearing of sublingual glands. How futile a thing is education. I can't write anymore, I get rather shaky when I sit up too long. Please forgive me for being impertinent and ungrateful. I was badly brought up. Yours with love. Judy Abbott. The Infirmary. 4th April. Dearest Daddy Long Legs. Yesterday evening just towards dark, when I was sitting up in bed looking out at the rain, and feeling awfully bored with life in a great institution, the nurse appeared with a long white box addressed to me, and filled with the loveliest pink rosebuds. And much nicer still, it contained a card with a very polite message written in a funny little uphill backhand, but one which shows a great deal of character. Thank you, Daddy, 1,000 times. Your flowers make the first real, true present I ever received in my life. If you want to know what a baby I am, I lay down and cried, because I was so happy. Now that I am sure you read my letters, I'll make them much more interesting, so they'll be worth keeping in a safe with red tape around them, only please take out that dreadful one and burn it up. I'd hate to think that you ever read it over. Thank you for making a very sick, cross, miserable freshman cheerful. Probably you have lots of loving family and friends, and you don't know what it feels like to be alone. But I do. Goodbye. I'll promise never to be horrid again, because now I know you're a real person. Also, I'll promise never to bother you with any more questions. Do you still hate girls? Yours forever. Judy. 8th hour, Monday. Dear Daddy Long Legs. I hope you aren't the trustee who sat on the toad. It went off. I was told, with quite a pop, so probably he was a fatter trustee. Do you remember the little dugout places with gratings over them, by the laundry windows in the John Grier home? Every spring when the hop toad season opened, we used to form a collection of toads, and keep them in those window holes, and occasionally they would spill over into the laundry, causing a very pleasurable commotion on wash days. We were severely punished for our activities in this direction, but in spite of all discouragement the toads would collect. And one day, well, I won't bore you with particulars, but somehow, one of the fattest, biggest, juiciest toads got into one of those big leather armchairs in the trustees' room, and that afternoon at the trustees' meeting. But I dare say you were there and recall the rest? Looking back dispassionately, after a period of time, I will say that punishment was merited, and if I remember rightly adequate. I don't know why I am in such a reminiscent mood except that spring, and the reappearance of toads always awakens the old acquisitive instinct. The only thing that keeps me from starting a collection, is the fact that no rule exists against it. After chapel, Thursday. What do you think is my favorite book? Just now, I mean, I change every 3 days. Wuthering Heights. Emily Bronte was quite young when she wrote it, and had never been outside of Haworth Churchyard. She had never known any men in her life. How could she imagine a man like Heathcliff? I couldn't do it, and I'm quite young and never outside the John Grier Asylum. I've had every chance in the world. Sometimes a dreadful fear comes over me that I'm not a genius. Will you be awfully disappointed, Daddy, if I don't turn out to be a great author? In the spring when everything is so beautiful and green and budding, I feel like turning my back on lessons, and running away to play with the weather. There are such lots of adventures out in the fields. It's much more entertaining to live books than to write them. Ow! That was a shriek which brought Sally and Julia and, for a disgusted moment, the senior from across the hall. It was caused by a centipede like this, only worse. Just as I had finished the last sentence, and was thinking what to say next. Plump! It fell off the ceiling and landed at my side. I tipped two cups off the tea table in trying to get away. Sally whacked it with the back of my hairbrush, which I shall never be able to use again, and killed the front end, but the rear 50 feet ran under the bureau and escaped. This dormitory, owing to its sage and ivy-covered walls, is full of centipedes. They are dreadful creatures. I'd rather find a tiger under the bed. Friday, 9:30 p.m. Such a lot of troubles. I didn't hear the rising bell this morning, then I broke my shoestring, while I was hurrying to dress, and dropped my collar button down my neck. I was late for breakfast and also for first hour recitation. I forgot to take any blotting paper, and my fountain pen leaked. In trigonometry, the professor and I had a disagreement touching a little matter of logarithms. On looking it up, I find that she was right. We had mutton stew and pie plant for lunch, hate 'em both, they taste like the asylum. The post brought me nothing but bills, though I must say that I never do get anything else, my family are not the kind that write. In English class this afternoon, we had an unexpected written lesson. This was it. I asked no other thing. No other was denied. I offered being for it. The mighty merchant smiled. Brazil? He twirled a button. Without a glance my way. But, madam, is there nothing else that we can show today? That is a poem. I don't know who wrote it or what it means. It was simply printed out on the blackboard when we arrived and we were ordered to comment upon it. When I read the first verse, I thought I had an idea. The mighty merchant was a divinity who distributes blessings in return for virtuous deeds, but when I got to the second verse and found him twirling a button, it seemed a blasphemous supposition, and I hastily changed my mind. The rest of the class was in the same predicament, and there we sat for three quarters of an hour, with blank paper and equally blank minds. Getting an education is an awfully wearing process. But this didn't end the day. There's worse to come. It rained so we couldn't play golf, but had to go to gymnasium instead. The girl next to me banged my elbow with an Indian club. I got home to find that the box with my new blue spring dress had come, and the skirt was so tight that I couldn't sit down. Friday is sweeping day, and the maid had mixed all the papers on my desk. We had tombstone for dessert, milk and gelatin flavored with vanilla. We were kept in chapel 20 minutes later than usual to listen to a speech about womanly women. And then, just as I was settling down, with a sigh of well-earned relief, to the portrait of a lady, a girl named Ackerley, a dough-faced, deadly, an intermittently stupid girl, who sits next to me in Latin, because her name begins with A, I wish Mrs. Lippitt had named me Zabriskie, came to ask if Monday's lesson commenced at paragraph 69 or 70, and stayed 1 hour. She has just gone. Did you ever hear of such a discouraging series of events? It isn't the big troubles in life that require character. Anybody can rise to a crisis and face a crushing tragedy with courage, but to meet the petty hazards of the day with a laugh, I really think that requires spirit. It's the kind of character that I am going to develop. I am going to pretend that all life is just a game which I must play as skillfully and fairly as I can. If I lose, I am going to shrug my shoulders and laugh, also if I win. Anyway, I am going to be a sport. You will never hear me complain again, Daddy dear, because Julia wears silk stockings and centipedes drop off the wall. Yours ever. Judy. Answer soon. 27th May Daddy Long Legs, Esquire. Dear Sir, I am in receipt of a letter from Mrs. Lippitt. She hopes that I am doing well in deportment and studies. Since I probably have no place to go this summer, she will let me come back to the asylum and work for my board until college opens. I hate the John Grier home. I'd rather die than go back. Yours most truthfully. Jerusha Abbott. Cher Daddy Jean Blanges. Voetta Sun Brick. Jesus Tracer is about the farm, parce que n'ai jamais been on a farm dans ma vie and I'd hate to return chez John Grier, et wash dishes tout l'été. There would be danger of quelque chose affreux happening, parce que j'ai perdu ma humilité d'autrefois et j'ai peur that I would just break out quelque jour et smash every cup and saucer dans la maison. Pardon brevité et paper. Je n'ai pas passé mes nouvelles parce que je suis dans French class et j'ai peur que monsieur le professeur is going to call on me tout de suite. He did. Au revoir. Je vous aime beaucoup. Judy. 30th May. Dear Daddy Long Legs. Did you ever see this campus? That is merely a rhetorical question. Don't let it annoy you, it is a heavenly spot in May. All the shrubs are in blossom, and the trees are the loveliest young green, even the old pines look fresh and new. The grass is dotted with yellow dandelions, and hundreds of girls in blue and white and pink dresses. Everybody is joyous and carefree, for vacation's coming, and with that to look forward to, examinations don't count. Isn't that a happy frame of mind to be in? And oh, Daddy, I'm the happiest of all. Because I'm not in the asylum anymore, and I'm not anybody's nursemaid or typewriter or bookkeeper, I should have been, you know, except for you. I'm sorry now for all my past badness. I'm sorry I was ever impertinent to Mrs. Lippitt. I'm sorry I ever slapped Freddie Perkins. I'm sorry I ever filled the sugar bowl with salt. I'm sorry I ever made faces behind the trustees' backs. I'm going to be good and sweet and kind to everybody, because I'm so happy. And this summer I'm going to write and write and write, and begin to be a great author. Isn't that an exalted stand to take? Oh, I'm developing a beautiful character. It droops a bit under cold and frost, but it does grow fast, when the sun shines. That's the way with everybody. I don't agree with the theory that adversity and sorrow and disappointment develop moral strength. The happy people are the ones who are bubbling over with kindliness. I have no faith in misanthropes. Fine word. Just learned it. You are not a misanthrope, are you, Daddy? I started to tell you about the campus. I wish you'd come for a little visit, and let me walk you about and say. That is the library. This is the gas plant, Daddy dear. The Gothic building on your left is the gymnasium, and the Tudor Romanesque beside it is the new infirmary. Oh, I'm fine at showing people about. I've done it all my life at the asylum, and I've been doing it all day here. I have honestly. And a man, too. That's a great experience. I never talked to a man before, except occasional trustees, and they don't count. Pardon, Daddy, I don't mean to hurt your feelings, when I abuse trustees. I don't consider that you really belong among them. You just tumbled onto the board by chance. The trustee, as such, is fat and pompous and benevolent. He pats one on the head and wears a gold watch chain. That looks like a June bug, but is meant to be a portrait of any trustee except you. However, to resume. I have been walking and talking and having tea with a man. And with a very superior man, with Mr. Jervis Pendleton of the House of Julia, her uncle, in short, in long, perhaps I ought to say, he's as tall as you, being in town on business, he decided to run out to the college, and call on his niece. He's her father's youngest brother, but she doesn't know him very intimately. It seems he glanced at her, when she was a baby, decided he didn't like her, and has never noticed her since. Anyway, there he was, sitting in the reception room, very proper with his hat and stick and gloves beside him, and Julia and Sally with seventh-hour recitations that they couldn't cut. So Julia dashed into my room, and begged me to walk him about the campus, and then deliver him to her, when the seventh hour was over. I said I would, obligingly but unenthusiastically, because I don't care much for Pendletons. But he turned out to be a sweet lamb. He's a real human being, not a Pendleton at all. We had a beautiful time. I've longed for an uncle ever since. Do you mind pretending you're my uncle? I believe they're superior to grandmothers. Mr. Pendleton reminded me a little of you, Daddy, as you were 20 years ago. You see, I know you intimately, even if we haven't ever met. He's tall and thinnish with a dark face all over lines, and the funniest underneath smile, that never quite comes through, but just wrinkles up the corners of his mouth. And he has a way of making you feel right off, as though you'd known him a long time. He's very companionable. We walked all over the campus, from the quadrangle to the athletic grounds, then he said he felt weak, and must have some tea. He proposed that we go to college and, It's just off the campus by the Pine Walk. I said we ought to go back for Julia and Sally, but he said he didn't like to have his nieces drink too much tea, it made them nervous. So we just ran away and had tea and muffins, and marmalade and ice cream and cake, at a nice little table out on the balcony. The inn was quite conveniently empty, this being the end of the month and allowances low. We had the jolliest time. But he had to run for his train the minute he got back, and he barely saw Julia at all. She was furious with me for taking him off, it seems he's an unusually rich and desirable uncle. It relieved my mind to find he was rich, for the tea and things cost 60 cents apiece. This morning, it's Monday now, three boxes of chocolates came by express, for Julia and Sally and me. What do you think of that? To be getting candy from a man. I begin to feel like a girl instead of a foundling. I wish you would come and have tea some day, and let me see, if I like you. But wouldn't it be dreadful if I didn't? However, I know I should. Bien. I make you my compliments. Jamais je n'ai t'oublié. Judy. P.S. I looked in the glass this morning, and found a perfectly new dimple, that I'd never seen before. It's very curious. Where do you suppose it came from? 9th June. Dear Daddy Long Legs. Happy day. I've just finished my last examination, physiology. And now? 3 months on a farm. I don't know what kind of a thing a farm is. I've never been on one in my life. I've never even looked at one, except from the car window, but I know I'm going to love it, and I'm going to love being free. I am not used even yet to being outside the John Grier home. Whenever I think of it, excited little thrills chase up and down my back. I feel as though I must run faster and faster, and keep looking over my shoulder, to make sure that Mrs. Lippitt isn't after me, with her arm stretched out to grab me back. I don't have to mind anyone this summer, do I? Your nominal authority doesn't annoy me in the least, you are too far away to do any harm. Mrs. Lippitt is dead forever, so far as I am concerned, and the Simples aren't expected to overlook my moral welfare, are they? No, I am sure not. I am entirely grown up. Hooray! I leave you now to pack a trunk, and three boxes of tea kettles and dishes, and sofa cushions and books. Yours ever. Judy. P.S. Here is my physiology exam. Do you think you could have passed?